Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another installment of our BJCP review sessions. I'm Matt Miller with Craft Beer Nation, and we've got a panel of moderators and experts alike, and we're going to talk about Category 5. We're going to talk about Box. So before we get into that, just wanted to let you know about the details. We are live on Hangouts On Air through Google+. We also will broadcast this as a podcast available on Stitcher, iTunes, and our own feed. Come to craftbeernation.org, and you'll find all the links and all the good stuff that you need there. So follow us, subscribe to us, however that stuff all works. But this is the good stuff. I'm really excited about tonight's style. I know we've got one of our judges, Don Blake, is really excited and made a big effort to get here tonight to be a part of the panel. We've got David Hausman, who's been we've been working him over the last couple of weeks with the bad weather and people not joining in, so he's covered a lot of the lager styles for us. And we've got back from business and illness alike, Agatha Feltis. We're glad to have all three of you here tonight.
Thank you.
The panel of moderators who know much less but are eagerly awaiting knowledge. Myself, Matt Miller. Gil Mello, Boris Castillo, Ashley Bauer, and Alan Huerta. How are you guys? How is everybody tonight, I guess? Let's throw that out there.
Great.
I'm not as good as I want, but better than I deserve.
All right. That's an acceptable. All right. Well, I realize.
I can't follow that, so I'm good.
I made a huge faux pas here. I pushed start on the broadcast thing, and my beer is around the corner and in the refrigerator. So I'm going to kick this off here. We'll find someone. Maybe we'll pick on someone other than David. David will have to work his way into the conversation. Who can, Agatha or Don, can one of you start in with a little bit about Ein Beck and where Bock really came from with the history and whatnot?
Sure. So first of all, what is Bock beer? It's a malty German lager. The style consists of several different, the category consists of several different sub-styles. We have traditional Bock, Maibock, Doppelbock, Eisbock, and then if you really want to get serious about it, you could also include Weizenbock in there if you were talking about strong German beers, but that's really an ale anyway. But as far as the history, when I was doing some research recently for a presentation, found some neat things. So the style of Bock originated in the city of Ein Beck, and the oldest recipe came in 1378. And Ein Beck is in north-central Germany, about halfway between Frankfurt and Hamburg. And they were part of the Hanseatic League. And one of the things that's interesting about the way that they had their, they kind of policed things and they had some quality enforcement requirements is that back in the 1400s, anybody could malt their own beer and they could brew their own beer, but they couldn't own brewing equipment. And so what that did was that the brewing equipment was owned by the town. And so they had one of the town's official town people, their job was to make sure that the beer was all consistent and of high quality. And because Ein Beck was part of the Hanseatic League, that their beer, which was consistent across all these different small-scale brewers, was distributed pretty far and wide and got a pretty it was very well received in a lot of different places. One of the places was down in Bavaria, in Munich in particular, and they, one of the higher-ups in Munich encouraged one of the Einbecker Braumeisters to come down and to brew their, what they call the Einpuckisch beer, and they liked him so much they wouldn't let him leave. And so they kept making this beer down in Bavaria, and so that's why it became popular down there. And in Bavaria, their dialect is pretty interesting. And so they bastardized this Einpuckisch beer to Unpuck, and Bock is German for goat. So you get this little bit of a regional dialect, and then you'll see goats associated with Bock on labels.
Like Celebrator? I've got...
Like Celebrator.
Yeah.
Little goat.
And so one of the things that wound up happening was that this beer became popularized during some of the fasting seasons because it was a little bit stronger and a little bit more robust. And then also kind of around the same time, the monks at St. Paula came up with their Doppelbach, or it got leaked out. People really liked it, and it was really similar to the Einbeck Bach beer. And so then they had this kind of an explosion of interest in the region. And so, that's the real short story on the history. Now when we start getting into some of the styles, we could talk a little bit about how the different styles kind of came about from the traditional Bach versus the Maibach and Doppelbach, etc.
And all the Doppelbachs finish in 8 or because of Salvatore.
Right. Most of them do. Not all of them, but yeah, Salvatore, that was the first one, and it's kind of an homage towards the first Doppelbach. They'll end them in the A-T-O-R suffix.
Interesting. Well, I've got Celebrator from Eyinger. I've got it poured into what is the only time I get this glass out is for Box. This is a Pokal? Somebody help me with it. And this is from it's from Einbecker.
Nice.
Is the brewer. Beautiful. Found them dusty on a shelf in a bottle shop. They didn't know what they were cheap. So man. So what kind of things? I mean, let's just start diving into the styles themselves, the subcategories here. I mean, you know, let's talk about what color they should be and where they should be with regards to ABV and color.
Well, maybe Matt, maybe the first thing you start with, it's not so much color, but the gravity of these is really defined initially by German law, maybe still, but they're strong lagers, but a Bach must be at least a original gravity of 1064. So you've got this kind of a range, 1064 to 1073 roughly, that defines the strength of a Bach beer. Doppelbach is at least 1074. Eisbach is, there's really a rule to that one, but it tends to be fairly big. These are all malt-forward beers. You will have enough hops in them they're not cloyingly sweet. So you do have enough hop bitterness to balance, but they're malt-forward beers, and again, lagers that don't have the esters that you get with ales. Very clean. None of them have hop aroma, except for the Maibach or Hellesbach, which can have some light noble hop character to it.
Mm-hmm. So explain this: is Helles and Maibach about the same thing?
They're really the same. It's the same. It's just two different ways they're referred to.
Right. The Helles or Hell in German is light, and Dunkel is dark. So if you see Dunkler Bach, that's just a traditional dark Bach. If you see Dunkel Doppelbach, that's a double Bach that's dark. You can also see a Helles Doppelbach.
And Maibach is Mai is May. It refers to a springtime beer.
Yes, yes. But it is the Hellesbach. I mean, I've never seen the two side by side that weren't the same. So, but maybe Agatha has.
No, I mean, I think that there is some discussion that maybe perhaps in the past there was a difference between Maibach and Hellesbach, but I think given the current style guidelines, they're indistinguishable from each other. I mean, the only thing that makes them distinguish from the rest of the Bach category is, I mean, they're all very malty beers. The Maibach being of a more golden color than the other Bachs and having slightly more hop bitterness, hop flavor, and hop aroma than the rest, but otherwise, it's a really big Helles.
And I'll add that I think the best examples of the Hellesbach will have just enough of Vienna malt in it that you get a little toastiness, a very light toastiness to the to the malt profile. Most of these are all decoction mashed, or at least they were. Probably still the best examples are. Probably not necessary with a lot of today's malt, but if you take under-modified malt and you decoction mash it, you're going to get these melanoitins. You're doing it for the flavor profile, not for the increased extraction rate.
Have we talked about melanoitins in the previous style discussions?
Yes.
Since I missed a couple. Okay, good.
Yeah, back when we were doing Oktoberfest, we did that.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, I mean, we've talked about, I mean, there seems to be a pretty significant difference then in some of these sub-styles here. I mean, a Helles is a light Bock and a Dunkel is a dark Bock, right? So, I mean, how do we...
All right.
You know, talk a little bit about, I mean, let's just talk about some, let's talk about the Helles Bock. I think I see a lot of those coming onto the market. I don't know if it's a flavor of the month or something. If it's there seems to be some movement towards making one of those. What's that? Sly Fox has got a Helles. I'm trying to think who else has got one out.
Mm. Well, I think it is kind of a popular thing because generally, at least in the U.S., people, there tends to be this proclivity towards lighter beers, and so they're appealing to that market. It's the same strength, but if you just used Pilsner malt, maybe a little bit of Vienna malt for accent, decoction mash that, you get something that's a golden color, not like the little darker than the Helles itself. But that, and that's basically the Bock, the Helles Bock. As Agatha said, you're going to have a little more bitterness, a little bit of noble hop aroma, hint of flavor perhaps, but it's just a rich, light-colored, toasty beer that's focused on the malt with enough hops to... You know it's there.
So whereas the traditional Bocks tended to be more on a sweet side, or
not so much. I wouldn't say sweet. They're malty. You're going to have enough bitterness there to balance them,
right? But it's less bitter than the Maibock. Thus, the balance would be a little bit different.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and a lot of people. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I just. It's when you say things are sweet, you have to be kind of careful because in the context of against something that's more bitter, yes, it's sweeter. But none of these, they're all fully attenuated beers. They should not be overly sweet or else it hasn't been made correctly.
And if you look at the stats between Maibock and traditional Bock, the starting gravities are identical, 1064 to 1072. And the finishing gravities are really close. The Maibock is 1011 to 1018, whereas traditional Bock is 1013 to 1019. So not a huge amount of difference there. Big difference is in the IBU level. Maibock is 23 to 35, and the traditional Bock is 20 to 27. So substantially less in the traditional Bock. And then, of course, the color for Maibock, we're talking 6 to 11, so it's kind of a deep gold to a light medium amber, and the traditional Bock is 14 to 22. So we're talking, you know, medium amber, copperish, up to, you know, light brown, medium brown.
And so basically, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the color comes from the choices of malts. So the Helles Bock is Pils, Vienna, maybe a hint of some Munich in there, but the traditional Bock and the Doppel Bock are pretty much maybe entirely Munich malt. Can be. you know, there may be some other accent malts, but generally Munich is the malt of choice there, and it's a darker color.
I like your beer color scarf, David. That's pretty.
You nice. Like that? That
yeah, that's that nice.
That was done by Beth Zangari. She knitted these for all the people in the calibration column.
That scarf is awesome.
It's cold here. Right?
I'm going to have to take a picture, David, because my wife's going to make me one now.
Yeah. It's way more classy than this thing.
Yeah, I got one of those, too. Everybody's got one of those.
And, you know, Don, at first I thought that was one of the 1990 slap wrist bracelets, and I was going to be like, nope, I take that instead. Sorry, David.
They're coming back as can cozies now. I saw them at a marketing yep. folks. They had yeah. one of them out. So
well, this has got an important tool on one end.
So before we leave, can I make an important point? Because I think Dave touched on a really important point, which is a lot of people tend to think of Bock as being kind of sweeter beers, and I think the important distinction is understanding the difference between malty and sweet. A lot of people tend to think of malty as being sweet, but sweet is residual sugar that's left in the beer, so it's under-attenuated or unfinished. Right, it tends to have a kind of intense cloying character, a little bit of a thick mouthfeel to it. But, you know, taste, you know, if you make a Bock, taste it as it's going along, and you'll kind of, as it finishes out, you'll understand the difference between a malty beer and a sweet beer. There's really very few beer styles which are actually allowed to be sweet, according to the guidelines. I mean, like Southern English Brown is pretty much the only one I could think of off the top of my head.
Sweet stout.
Well, even though sweet stout, I mean, it's not really sweet. I mean, it's got lactose in it, but
give me some more examples then on how to identify the difference, because I associate the malt with sweet. So how do I how can I have some mental cues on how to differentiate between those two descriptions?
That's a good question.
Something maybe tangential. Is think of a difference between a good dark rye bread and a banana bread that's got a really, you know, maybe not so much of the banana in there, but still has a lot of sweetness in it.
Yeah.
The, you know, they could both be rich and bready and toasty, but one's going to have more just pure, you know, sugar in it. They say kind of tangential, but a little bit of a way to maybe think about it differently, as opposed to we're all used to beer. We say it's unattenuated. Well, it's not done.
But if you move into categories like meads and other categories that are, they tend to be sweet, don't they?
There are sweet meads and there are dry meads. But we'll talk about all those
later.
Next year, sometime in 2015.
Yeah.
So I guess.
So maybe what you could do, actually, Matt, this is a good point. So maybe if you start off with like a commercial Bock, and then so taste it, but then start adding in a little bit of honey or something to it, and see if you can taste the difference between the malty character and the sweetness from like the honey.
That's a good idea. That's a lot easier. I was gonna say drink some wort. You know, couldn't we go?
That'll also work.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt, I'll send you some wort. Some unfermented wort.
Yeah. All right. Well, so basically then, as I look at these styles, essentially it's a Bock already is a lager on steroids, right? Somebody went, hey, let's pitch lagering yeast into a 1060 beer.
1064.
And so, yep. 1064, right. So so then there's the Helles, and then you go up to traditional, then you get even stronger with the Doppel, and then they do this crazy icing thing with Icebox, and which is essentially what? Just a Doppel or any of the other styles where they freeze out some of the water?
I think it has to be a Doppel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has to be a Doppel. So as I look at these styles, there isn't really any secret here anymore. Now I can see why they're so closely related and in the same overall category, as they're just different strengths or they're different concentrations of this of the same kind, same style of beer.
But there are there are some changes that occur. So as you use more and more Munich malt, for instance, and going from a Bock to a Doppelbock, Munich does tend to have its own kind of fruity nut fruitiness to it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pit fruit kind of things, the prunes or plums or figs kind of notes that come with Munich malt, particularly in high concentrated Munich.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to a Doppelbock, and you can have some of those notes. It's not esters from the fermentation, it's and the yeast, but from the Munich malt. And then when you get to Eisbock, the one thing that happens, not only are you freezing water out, it's a distillation, essentially. It's freeze distillation. You're concentrating all of the flavors. There could be good flavors, and there could be bad ones. You're going to concentrate them all. And the trick is not just to take a Doppelbock and freeze it, because you may end up then with an imbalance in bitterness to malt. You really have to know in advance that that's where you're going and make sure that you've got the right balance in the Doppelbock that will result in what you want in the Eisbock. Because with an Eisbock, it could get very cloying if you get all that frozen water out and you end up with a concentrated malt. You actually need a little more hops in there to balance that.
Yeah, I think Jamil Zainashev makes that point in Brewing Classic Styles. I think he has a recipe for both a Doppelbock and an Eisbock. And he makes the point that you can't just use the same recipe for the Doppelbock and the Eisbock, because it actually tends to be, I think, too sweet if you take a Doppelbock and you freeze it to make an Eisbock. So you actually have to make one that's slightly lower gravity and finishes out a lot drier to make an Eisbock. And I've personally never made one, but I don't tend to make big beers on a regular basis. But I have a friend who's made one using an ice cream maker.
We had a bad idea one of our shows, one of our Friday night hangouts. We decide all to freeze beer. It was a little disgraceful, I think. That it didn't taste good at all, at least not mine.
I'm glad you brought that up, Gil, because I'm pretty sure that was your idea. But we'll just move on.
It wasn't my idea. No,
I got a question though for this category for the hops, since we are now going up in gravity from the previous lagers. Are we still using the noble hops and we just increasing that amount, or are we branching off and going to other German or European hops that might have higher alpha acids to essentially balance out the increase of malts?
You're going to want to stick with the classic noble hops, your Saaz, Hallertau, Tettnang. But then it's not necessarily using more hops, it's using them appropriately for the style. So, we're not saying, if we're saying that the Maibock is a Helles on steroids, it kind of is and it kind of isn't. Traditional Bock isn't necessarily a Vienna or an Oktoberfest that's kicked up a couple notches. It's a little different.
Give me an example of how we would use those hops differently, just in boils, just in schedule?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly in schedule, right? So all of them will have a bittering hop addition. But really, the Maibock is probably the only one that might have either a flavor or aroma hop addition, but very light on both of those. Realistically, you're probably going to want to stick with mostly bittering hops for all these.
To Boris's note there, if I were going to do this, and I haven't made one in a long time, I don't think you want to take something like Sots, which may at average of a 3.3 alpha acid, and use a lot of that, because you're going to end up with a lot of plant material that gives you a lot of tannins and get astringency. You pick something like maybe a Tettnang or a Perlet or something that's got a higher alpha acid as the bittering hop, because you're not going to get flavor out of it anyway.
Yep.
But if I'm making the Hellespach, I would do the same, but I'm going to finish that with a little bit of good Hollow Tower to give it that that character in the Roman flavor.
Yeah, I just went through the IBUs for all the subcategories, and I think 35 or 37 is the threshold, which isn't very high. So I mean you're looking at 15 to 37 as all the subcategories for the entire category. So it's not really that more. It's not that much more bitter than the previous German categories we've already talked about. But yeah, that makes sense to use a higher alpha acid hop as your first edition, and then finish it out with the noble hops of whatever you would like to use,
right,
to kind of round out the beer. I've used Hollow Tower. I've used Pearl A. I think that's
Magnum's
about it.
Which one? Like 8 or 9?
Magnum's a good one.
Magnum's a good one.
Yeah.
So, and I love Hollow Tower Miller. I've used Hollow Tower Miller for. Yeah, I love that hop.
Yep.
And Tetnang. I love both of those hops.
Yeah, they're great, but if you don't really need the aroma and the flavor from them, you're not really getting a lot out of it. If you're, just adding it for bittering, those are probably not what I would lean towards. I would lean more towards the Perle or the Magnum for a bittering hop addition, simply because, it gets kind of expensive to buy your Hallertau and your Tetnang if you don't need the flavor and the hop aroma, right?
So, all right. What about the malts? Do you use the malts for the double block the same as used for the Helles or the Maibock, or you use different
malts?
Yeah. So back when we were talking about, the Helles is the lighter version. To Dave's point, that one's pretty much just pills, maybe a little bit of Vienna, melanoidin malt if you want to try to kick up the melanoidin character without doing a decoction mash. When you get into the Bock and the Doppelbock, you're really leaning more towards, Munich and Vienna.
Right.
As your base malt.
Even for the double.
Even for the traditional Bock, the traditional Bock's actually pretty amber to dark. So that would be a lot of Vienna. And
you're
Munich
not going to darken that with roasted. You're not going to use roasted malts in these. Roast would not be appropriate as a malt character. You want things that are bready. And that's what you get from Munich and Vienna.
All right. Yeah, that's a good point about the... So we didn't talk about... Don didn't talk about Doppelbock being liquid bread, but the backstory on the Doppelbock is that it became really popular in the Middle Ages during, of all this time, Lent, because, monks couldn't actually eat during the day while they were fasting, but they were allowed to drink liquid. So they developed, or at least this is the story, liquid bread, which is Doppelbock as we know it now, because they could, just sip on it as they were going through the day and keep getting, energy and nutrients from the Doppelbock without eating.
Yeah, energy and nutrients. That's why.
That's why we drink the beer.
Mm-hmm.
And today is Mardi Gras, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
then we... Huh?
Fat Tuesday.
Fat Tuesday, and then we enter Lent.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's a great choice of styles for today.
Well, I was peeking ahead, and next week, we're doing hybrids, which cream ale is one, and we're doing a show on cream ales Friday night. So it all comes together. I guess when you drink as much beer as we do, it all kind of runs together. So
yeah.
Ashley, who apparently is refusing to turn her microphone on tonight, she had a comment that she'd read in the style guidelines, and it said, under Maibock, was designed to walk a fine line between blandness and too much color. So I didn't read the background on that. Ashley, unmute yourself and chime in as to what you were digging for there.
No, it says that over in the overall impression here, 5A. I guess I'm a little confused, but it could just be my blondness. I'm not sure. What
Your
does that mean? Is.
You're a Helles, not a blonde.
Very nice.
So you could think if you have a bunch of light grains, and you're trying to make a beer be light in color, but you want it to be dark. You want it to be light enough yet still be flavorful enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that, you know, too bland and too much color. So if you get too dark, you're going to get a lot of the melanoids, a lot more of the malt character, but it's also going to start getting dark. So it's kind of a little bit of a teeter-totter that they're trying to ride there.
Right. You wouldn't make it with all Pils malt like a German Helles. That would be, the flavor then wouldn't be right. If you made a Helles at 1064, it really wouldn't be the Bock because it wouldn't have the right flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tried to make the color, but you didn't make the right gravity, you know, you did it the wrong way with adding Carafa, you're not going to have the right flavor profile either. So I think that was a good description about the balance between flavor and blandness and the color.
Is it a good description because it's a good description, or is it a good description because you wrote it?
I didn't write that one. No.
Oh.
Yeah, it makes sense now that you explained it, but when I was reading over it, I was like, what? Because I don't necessarily think of light color as being bland, but I mean, it makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing it to the Helles, I guess.
All right, so have we talked a little bit about what the Eisbock is? Have we talked any about why some fool decided to do this? Have we talked any about the processes involved on a commercial scale for doing it? I mean, you know, if I've got a 5-gallon carboy, I can drop it in the deep freeze and come back and pour the good stuff out. How do they do this in a production-style brewery?
Well, so a little bit on the history side, and when I was researching for this talk, you know, I guess the popular story is that some young brewer at one of the, was at the Kulmbacher Brewery, was supposed to bring all his barrels inside, and he said he forgot about it, or he was too tired, poor little guy, and it got cold and froze, and so in the morning, they, you know, saw, oh, there's still some casks outside, and they opened it up, and it was, you know, this big, a big shell of ice, and on the inside was this nice liquid, and the Braumeisters made him drink it, and he says, this is really good. You should try some. And they said, oh, yes, you're right. This is really good. He probably still had to do a whole lot of cleaning and a whole lot of manual labor before he was hoisted onto pedestals of being the inventor or discoverer of such a cool thing. But so that's a little bit of the story. How people would do it is it's very, you know, energy and labor intensive. You got to somehow freeze your beer down to a certain point so that you can get enough result in liquid is also, you know, concentrate it down, and then you're going to want to, say you have two tanks, you freeze one of them and then transfer to another tank, and you're going to be leaving a fair bit of water in the first one. And so it's also, I don't believe it's really technically legal because it's distillation. That's why I see a lot of homebrew ice box, and finding a commercial ice box is pretty hard. Because at the presentation, I just wanted to find these ice box, you know, good luck. The only one that you can really find regularly is the Kulmbacher ice box, which is really awesome. But if you try to find one from a brewery, it's usually just a little one-off thing that they're doing, that they're pouring on a special tap. Because it is, like I said, it's labor-intensive. It's an expensive beer to make. Just because you're making a whole lot of beer and throwing away a lot of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, cause I think the rule of thumb is you freeze like 20 or 30% of the volume and you as ice, and you get rid of that much of the beer. I mean, there's some rule of thumb for it. I can't remember what the exact number is off the top of my head.
17 ice box, just amazing. Just an awesome.
Yeah, I have one of them on the shelf. I was going to put it in the fridge for tonight, but I decided not to have a 12% beer.
Oh, the Aventinus ice box?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny. Oh, wow. If you make it to Schneider and Zona in Germany, they'll take you on a tour of the entire facility. They'll let you actually just kind of hang over the Weizen tank so you can smell the...
Yeah.
The aroma coming up, but they absolutely refuse to show you the Aventinus Eisbock production facility. It is like a big, huge no-no, and they will not take you there. But
I have military training. I'll get you guys background info. Don't worry.
But if you want to see how I think they do it, are you guys familiar with BrewDog, which is a brewery in Scotland? Go watch the video for how they make Tactical Nuclear Penguin. They actually kind of invaded an ice cream factory and put the Russian Imperial Stout in an industrial ice cream maker.
Yeah.
That
and
is
scrape
awesome.
The ice off. So I think it's kind of a similar process for making Eisbach. I mean, it's an ice beer. They're making Tactical Nuclear Penguin, which is 45% alcohol or something. But yeah, I think it's similar because I know a few guys here in Indy who've made very much award-winning Eisbach, and pretty much it's just like, you know, put it in the keg, put it in the freezer, and just kind of shake it up and check on it every once in a while and just use a strainer to keep straining out the ice until you think, you know, you've gotten about 25% of the volume.
Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Labor intensive sounds about
it's
right.
It's a little labor intensive, yeah.
Yeah. I can't think, though. A brewery just tapped an ice box here in the Richmond area here the last couple of days, and I didn't go find a deep freeze or freeze ray or something. I'll have to go search for it. Okay, what haven't we... I'm just trying to... I've made the mistake of drinking... I drank an IPA as we were preparing for the show, and all the subtle...
That's what I'm drinking right now. I'm not being very helpful here. I'm sorry, I'm drinking all a small the,
All these great fruity notes and malt and all this kind of stuff I'm supposed to be looking
for. There you
go,
he's got it. Don's got it.
It just blows me away here, so...
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're talking about Eisbach. I think one of the things to keep in mind is when you make a really, really big beer like an Eisbach, it's not going to be good to taste right away, right? Put it in a bottle, you know, let it carve it up, put it in a bottle, and let it sit for however long. You know, make enough so that you can taste a bottle every couple of months. Because, you know, really large ABV beers take a while to
mature. Or as long as your liver can endure.
Yeah, put it in small bottles. You know, don't put it in the keg and just keep going at it, you know, every weekend.
Yeah.
But particularly Eisbach, and even Doppelbach to some extent, to Dave's point, it takes a little while for those, you know, kind of fruity characters to mature in the beer, so... 16 new messages.
That sounds a lot like our moderators. The takes a while for the fruity characters to mature.
That's right.
Yeah. So all right. Well, let's start talking final thoughts here. Unless there was anything outrageous that we've missed here, guys. Can you think of any of the? You know, I know we want to kind of give some tips for folks that are home that are going to brew and ferment these things. I mean, you ferment this just like a lager. Longer if you use that rule based on gravity for length of time in the lagering tanks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Pitch so, plenty of yeast.
So making a bock is a pretty big commitment for
it
tank
is.
Space.
And one of the things, you know, if you look at, you know, the big yeast suppliers, they actually have a yeast that they kind of recommend for making bocks. And we haven't really gotten into yeast strain selection in terms of any of the other ones. I mean, the Weizenbock is different because you use the Weizen yeast to make that one. So you can get the banana and the clove. But I think that, you know, it's one of the things you should play around with in your own brewery when you're talking about making lagers. Not all lager yeasts are the same, just like not all ale yeasts are the same. And there's one called the German Bock lager yeast that, you know, both Y yeast and White Lab sells, which to me really accentuates the malty character a lot more than like some of the other lager yeasts do. So they kind of, you know, recommend that you use it for bock yeast. I would just recommend that you try it for yourself and see how you like it.
Yeah, we just recently did a really cool experiment where we had 16 different yeast strains that were all pitched into German Pilsner. And the Southern German Lager and the German Pilsner yeast were kind of our baseline. But we were trying all these different yeasts, and it was stunning the maltiness that you got out of the Bock yeast compared to everything else. So
I would definitely recommend seeking that out. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be any difference in cost as far as your overall, your overall batch, but definitely make a starter, make an appropriate sized pitch for what you're going to be, you know, feeding to that yeast, because it generally a lot of sugar can really stress the yeast out and start driving those esters. So
yeah. I mean, a lot of people, when they're making like a Doppelbock or something like that, will make something like a Helles or something. And, you know, ferment that out and use the yeast cake from that Helles to pitch for the Doppelbock or something, because you really need a lot of a lager yeast.
Yep.
For these.
Now, that's one thing that do the BJCP style guidelines, do they recommend yeasts? Do they, I mean, that's obviously something that adds a lot of flavor character to the beer itself. Is that, I mean, how do you guys handle yeast from a BJCP perspective?
I mean, when you taste a beer, you're really tasting the result, not what necessarily went into it. Although a lot of times you can tell what went into it in malts or with hops. With yeast, you know, most of the lager yeast tend to be fairly neutral. As Don said, and Agatha, the Bock yeast accentuates maltiness. But somebody might have still have a malty beer without that particular yeast.
Yep.
Or they may not be malty even though they did use that. So there's a whole slew of things that may go on.
Mm-hmm.
When you taste something that's really off, like you get the clove and the bananas, and a Bock, and it wasn't a Weizenbock, then maybe it was, you know, got cross-contaminated with some other yeast they were using. Those things you might be able to tell. Or that they used an ale yeast, and really, I don't know how many competitions, even recently I was judging where it was a lager, and it just was not a lager. I mean, it was as ale as it could be. And the interesting thing was, the guy comes up afterwards and he says he didn't like the fact that I didn't give him a very good score for his lager when it was so ale-like. And he says, but I can't lager. I don't have the refrigeration. Well, then don't do that. You know, I mean, do what you can do. Don't do a poor job of what you can't do.
Yeah, brew and submit ales then, and we'll have a good time.
And why the Weizenbock are done in ale style rather than lager? Any special reason?
Because it's an ale yeast that drives that banana clove component, which is, you know, basically a Weizenbock is a strong Dunkelweiss.
Right. It's a wheat beer.
Yep. So for that one, you have to use the Weizen yeast strain. It's an ale yeast strain that has the banana ester and the clove phenol. And, of course, oh, we didn't talk about that, so Weizenbock will be just like you have a Dunkelweizen that's probably like, you know, half Vienna Munich, half wheat malt. The same would be true for a Weizenbock as opposed to, you know, a Doppelbock, which would be mostly just Munich, Vienna, and some pills. And you got to have the wheat and the Weizen yeast for the Weizenbock. But it's just a really big Dunkelweizen, kind of like Don said.
So what category does a Dunkelweizen fall under then?
The wheat beers.
Yeah, German Weiss is what, 15B?
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. 15, I think.
Yeah, 15B for the Dunkelweiss and 15C for the Weizenbock.
All right.
Weizenbock is, you know, basically one of the things that I mentioned in the talk that I was giving. You know, Bock can be kind of like today's imperial. So if you say, oh, it's a Weizenbock, it means it's like an imperial Weissbier, or imperial Weiss, Dunkelweiss.
Kind of, sort of. All right. So because it seemed like Aventinus was a frozen Weizenbock.
Right. Well,
there's Aventinus, and there's Aventinus Eisbock.
Right.
There's two of them. There's Aventinus and the Eisbock version.
Are you confused yet, Matt?
I'm 100% confused, but that's a normal condition. I mean,
so what you need to do is go to your local beer store, get the entire lineup of the Schneider beers, and just drink them one after the other, you know. Except just they're not in order anymore.
Dial 9-1 and then wait to hit the 1 at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. As soon as you get to the ice pack, we'll just hit the 1.
One thing I should point out, though, is that one of the other categories in which you might encounter a bock type fairly frequently is in smoke and wood-aged, because we haven't gotten to Rauch beer yet, but one of the traditional versions of the Schlenkerla beers is a smoked bock, which is very, very good, and you encounter it a lot in the smoked and wood-aged. Yeah. Category.
Yeah, I've had their smoked Marzen, which was pretty awesome. So I think when we get to that show, I'll definitely be on the lookout for their bottle.
Oh yeah.
So all right, so I think we've covered this one top to bottom. Then I'm looking for visual cues from all the BJCP judges that say, "Oh my gosh, no, we didn't tell them about." I'm not seeing any of those mm-hmm. visual cues. So I say we wrap this one up and. We get out of here under an hour, and we come back in 2 weeks and we talk about light hybrids.
Are we doing the form, the BJCP forms in between the lager and the ales we talked about last week?
Yeah, we did talk about that, Gil. So then let's come back in 2 weeks with an episode that's interesting, and between now and then we'll decide if it's going to be the forms or. I mean, what is a hybrid ale? What is a hybrid?
What is a hybrid?
Yeah.
It's not a lager or an ale.
Ah, so.
All of it's a both.
Sounds good.
It's somewhere in between.
A ale.
So we'll figure out some place to slide in some a review session about scoring sheets, and we'll get back to you and let you know. So tune in to Craft Beer Nation and or the Craft Beer Community on Google+. And you'll find that information, and you'll know. Or just come back in 2 weeks and see what the smart people are talking about. And I'm not one of them. So,
and the dumb people are.
Yeah, what the dumb people are listening to. That's right. So thanks for joining, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we will do this again in 2 more weeks, I hope, and have some good content and move our way through subject matter on our way to all taking the BJCP test. So thanks, everybody, and cheers.
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 Cheers.